necessity, but I would say that the ultimate element that I can speak about, Dr. Alan Jakovich Lita, he was the personal physician of Avraham Lichtenstein, Ratzal, and he learned in the yeshiva a fair number of years. And most of my discussions with him do not, with the exception of the corona issues, that I have discussed with him many, many times in the course of the last number of months, but primarily his primary interest seems to be in Avas HaTorah, HaBo'eret B'Kirbo, a passionate love of Torah that is incredible. Halavai, all the doctors should be like this one.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi David. And hello, people who are watching Rabbi Shoah. I'd like to send my regards to Rabbi Shoah. You know Rabbi Shoah from South Africa?
Zoom.
Yes, hello, Rabbi Shoah. It's a privilege to be here. And you guys, I'm jealous of you guys that you have Rabbi David. You stole a Rabbi David from Beit Shemesh to come here. Maybe Aliyah, you mean Aliyah? I don't know. But you guys don't know how lucky you are to have Rabbi David. Right, you did Nefesh, but also Tremendous Talmud Chacham and a Tzaddik, and what more can I say? You guys are, the schus is yours that you have. So I just, today, tomorrow we start Daf Yomi Yuma. I tend to be a couple of days ahead in Daf Yomi because I get nervous about falling behind. So that's my secret of not falling behind, is that I stay a couple of days ahead of the cycle. If it happens, something comes up in the hospital, so I feel a little less nervous about it. So tomorrow we start on Yuma. It's very fitting that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Yortzeit is tonight, right now. And it's fitting that Daf Yomi corresponds to his Yortzeit, because he had a particular love of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, of the sukkias of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. I remember like the last 15 years of his life, I used to go every year to the yeshiva for Yom Kippur. And he used to, well, for 40 years, he used to give a shiur on Avodas Yom HaKippurim starting at 10 o'clock at night after the shiur at Yichud. And there would be hundreds of people there, and he would go until there was no one left. And they would walk out, and you know, and then he would be talking, everyone would be sleeping, and then there'd be, and I had to stay because I felt responsibility to be with him, to watch over with him. And he'd be talking, and there may be, he'd be talking, there's no one there. Everyone was sleeping and no one there. He would just be going on the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, and then he finished the shiur, and he'd go, oh, but we didn't cover this, we didn't cover this, we didn't cover this, and then talking to himself, and then usually at 12:31, he'd stop, and I had the schus to walk home with him on Yom Kippur night, and it was like, he was in a different world when he was walking home that night. He wasn't in our world, he was in the world of Rav Chaim, the Ramban. He was just thinking about Avodas Yom HaKippurim, and those were what he's thought. So it's particularly fitting that his Yortzeit is on this night. So I hope you have all your sheets. Tomorrow we're going to learn the first Mishnah in Yuma. And the Mishnah starts, Shivat, everyone knows, Shivat Yamim, Kodim Yom HaKippur, Mafrishin Kohen Gadol, Mibesel Lishkas Farhedrin, Umetakna Kohen Acher, Takhtav Shema Yireh Psul. 7 days before Yom Kippur, we separate the Kohen Gadol, and take him to Lishkas Farhedrin, and we put a substitute Kohen Gadol too. So the question is, what's the makor for this din? Why do we do that? What's the makor for this halacha of the hafrash of seven yamim? So the Gemara says on Beis Amanal, there's two machokas from Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So minad imili amar of namnia bar chelka amar of machzia bar idi amar of Yochanan amar kra. Kasher asah bayom hazeh siva Hashem lasot lechaper alechem lasos elu masei para lechaper alechem masei yom kippurim. The pasuk learns it from the miluim. The pasuk says before umi petach o mohein lo teitzu shivas yamim. You can't walk out 7 days. And then the miluim, and then the gemara learns lasot elu masei para lechaper lev masei yom kippurim. So we learn it from the miluim, it applies to the para and Yom HaKippurim. Rav Reish Lakish has a different limud. Ella mar mihechi yalaf amr mi Sinai dichtiv vayishkan kvod Hashem al har Sinai vayachasi anan sheishis yamim vayikral Moshe b'yom ha-shvi vayikral Moshe b'yom ha-shvi ma sheishis yamim debana av ha-nichnas b'machana shechina taon priyish ha-shteisha. whoever goes into the Machane Shechina has to be separated before 6 days. The Gemara asks why six, why at seven. Like you'll learn to that discussion on Gilma Obeis. You have to work some other reason. But the Makor is that of Matan Torah. So Rav Soloveitchik wrote this book, Avodas Yom HaKippurim. He has an introduction. And it's Shirim Shenemru V'Kayetz Tavshin Chavdal. Are you there?
I heard you from the wrong, not in Tavshin Chavdal.
On Avodas Yom HaKippur. So the introduction to the book, the Rav writes, Od mishachar tal yadusi nimshachti lasot lishtasheya behilchos elu b'miuchad. Uvizichroni shekad havni talya. You see, noseh v'noseh bin harbeim avamori. When I was a young boy, I used to learn these halachas with my father. Af b'itzmumo shoyom soma rabba. The beautiful, the way the Rav writes. Zika, though, this connection hit me deep. Af hit kasachti b'ruza shanim. And now I'm going to give the shirim that I learned over decades. So it's really fitting. Rav wrote this book that based on the Rav Shirim in Kayetz Tavshin Chafdali. Okay, so the Rav writes on this machlokas, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. The nearest machlokas amit yacheset lo rak l'makor hadin ela af l'ofyav u'mechayavim. That this machlokas where we learn the halacha prisha from Avni Milu Martin Torah is not just halacha in where it comes from, but it relates to the essence of the halacha. So according to Reish Lakish, the hayafutu misinai hareisha mechayav u'biat migdash. That the Mechayev, you learn from Matan Torah, the Mechayev is Amida Lifnei Hashem. That's the Mechayev wife do Prisha. Anyone who wants to stand before Hashem has to do Prisha Shevin Yamim. If you learn from Avni Miluim, then the Mechayev is the Avodas of the Yom. And the Rav points out that the Nafkamina could be Para. Exactly, the Sreifas Para, to prepare the Para Duma, they used to serve it on Har Zeitim, Be'efshar La'afrashas Kohen, service of Para, near Dwey Shlachas, B'shtaber, Jedel Midrabbana. According to the one who learns it from Amid Lifnei Shechina, the par is only a halacha midrabanan because it's not a halacha miavoda. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Other people say that. That's machlokas and what the machayev of the prisha is. But then the question is, what's the reason? What's the matara for the prisha? Why do we separate for 7 days? Okay, so you look at the Gemara on Chet Amud Bet. I wrote it on the sheet. The Tana Rabbanan. Ain bein koin a sorif is a para the koin gadol biyom kippurim el shazer prishisho lekdusha achiv a koin noagim ba vizer prishisho letara bein achiv noagim bo. The Gemara says there's a difference between the prisha of the koin who's sorry for the para duma and the avodas yom kippurim. The koin the sorif is a par is a prisha for tara, and Rashi explains what is a prisha for tara. Rashi says lahach mir betara so. It's to have more tara, more purification. So I forgot that you could say that the reason why the prisha is what the Mishnah says, it's just a preventive prisha. Shema yitago pool stool. We can't have the kohen go hanging out, and maybe someone's going to die next to him, and then he won't be able to do the avoda because it'll be tamei meis. So it's preventative. But according to Rashi, the lashon is lahach mir betara so, that we want to elevate his tara. And this could be a machlokas tanaim. You look at the next chedam alav, the Tanya. Echad zeh ve'echad zeh meizil lev kol shivas yamim. The Kohen Asorif Apar and the Kohen Avodas Yom HaKippurim, they both have to stay, yet you do hazah 7 days. You do hazah of the Afar Paraduma all 7 days of the Prisha. Rav Yossi says you only do the third and the seventh day, because that's only really what you're worried about. And if he's tamei meis when he comes into the prisha, then you do it on the third day and the seventh day. And then Rav Chanina Skana Kohen Gadol, and we remember him from the end of the first paragraph of Pesachim. Omer Kohen service par mezel of Kol Shiva Kohen Gadol biyom Kippur and mezel of Shlishi v'Shvi. So Rav Chanina Skana Kohen Gadol maybe learns like the Tana Rabbanan. There's difference between the Kohen service of par and the Kohen of Olas Yom Kippur. In the Kohen service of par, it's the Hachmir B'Tara. So you want to elevate your Tara. You have to do the Hazah every day, even though there's real no reason for it. But but the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, it's just the third and seventh, just preventive kind of Hazah. And that could be tied into a machlok. It could be similar to a Gemara and Daf Lamed. The Gemara and Daf Lamed says, Shalus ben Zoma, Tfila Zo Lama. The Gemara said that the Kohen Gadol, in the morning of Yom Kippur, he does a tefillah before he does anything. But he was poor 7 days. What does he have to do a tefillah for? Amar lehem, Uma Mishana Mikodesh Lekodesh Mimakom She'anosh Karis Lemakom She'anosh Karis Shon Tefillah. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, anytime he moved the domain between the Heichel and the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedushin, had to do a tefillah. Mimakom She'ain. Tom Tfila, Hamashana Michol the Kodesh, Makam Shaino is cars, the Makam Shah is cars, Aina Din Shatal Tfila. So when a Kohen moves from the Chol, which is the Lishkash Parhedrin, and he goes to Kodesh, of course you have to do a Tfila. Not because you're worried about any Tuma, but you're going up in Tara. Anytime you go up in Tara, you have to do a Tfila. Rav Yehuda Amar Srach Tfilahu. No, it's just what I would call precautionary Tfila. Kadesh Yiskor Tuma Yishana should be other first. He'll think maybe I was Tame at some time when he gets to go to the mikvah, and then he won't do the avoda. So it's more a precautionary kind of. So that's the same machlokas. Is the reason the Tara of the Kohen Gadol on Erev Yom Kippur, is it to be lahakmir l'tara so, or is it just precautionary? Okay, that's one nimuk, an idea of Tara, the Kohen Gadol. But we said in the Gemara, Kohen Gadol l'kedusha. The Kohen is Porish l'kedusha. So Rashi explains, l'kanes l'makan eshchina, v'yeh nivdal mikol kalas rusha chalav ema b'havdal somin abrius. It's to be lahavdil from Kalas Rosh, to have an element of Ema, Shechalav of Ema. Before you go into the Machane Kadosh, before you meet a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have an element of Ema. And that's also the Gemara says on Gimel Dal Amadet, Rav Masi ben Cheir Shomar Lo'afaf Kasav El Ya'ayim Elav, Kedei She'at Torah Nitnes Be'ema. When they said the reason why Moshe or Rabbeinu was Mafrish for 7 days, La'ayim Elav. So Rashi says, before someone goes into the Machane Shechina, you have to have an element of Ema. And a fear or awe, there might be two different things. Okay, so we have two Nimukim here. We have a Nimuk of Tara, and we have one of Ema, why you do the Prisha. The Gemara in Dalet has another level. Tanya Kavaseh, Rav Yochanan, this goes according to Rav Yochanan, Bezos Yavo on our Kodesh, B'mash, Bezos, what's Bezos Yavo? B'mash Amar B'binyan, Mahi B'inyan D'miluim, Uma Amar B'in D'miluim, Aaron Pirei Shiva, V'shimesh Yom Echad, Umosha Matlo Kol Shiva, Kedei Lechan Chova Avoda, in order to educate him in the Avoda, V'af L'doros, Kohen Gadol Pirei Shiva, the Kohen Gadol leaves for 7 days, Umashamish Yom Echad and Yom Kippur. Ushne Tamechad Mitamah Shom Moshe Lafukestukim Masurno Kol Shiva Kide Lechan Choba Avoda. And Mikan Amru Shivas Yom Kol Yom Kippur Mafrish and Kol Gadol Mibesel Ishkas Parhedrin. And the Rambam says in Hilchas Avodas Yom Kippurim Kol Shivas Yom in Miraculous Oba Avoda. You practice the Avoda. Zorik is Adam Umachdir is Akhtoris Umetiv Asaneros Umachdir Abitamel Mizbeh. So you should be, you know how to do it. It's practice. You have to go 7 days in order to practice the avoda. The Kohen Gadol cannot do anything all year and then come and he won't know what to do. So you have to practice the avoda. That's a third reason. The laraglo ba'avoda. But Rashi says one word. He learns differently than the Rambam. Rashi says, on lelchancho lelamdo. You should teach him. That's when he did the other 7 days. there was an element of Lima Torah in the Prisha of 7 days before. And if you look at all the Mishnayos in Yuma, you'll see that there's an element of Lima Torah. And the next one on your sheet is from the Mishnayos Yuma. What did Kohen Gadol do the night before Yom Kippur? He learned, and then the Mishnah says what he learned, but the night before, if he was a Talmud Chacham, he would learn and teach Torah. And then he did it, and then the 7 days before, they would learn Torah. So, and then, it's not only before, but an element of the Avodah Yom Kippur. Now, whether it's a part of the Avodah or not, is a Machlokes Rishonim, clearly according to Rambam, it wasn't, but the Mishnah says, in Zion Aleph, Ba Lo Kohen Gadol Likros, that at the end of the Avodah, what happened? Imrat so debut. If he did the begadim of the Kohen Gadol, korev in lav installatia lavan mishlo, his own clothes. Chazan miyak Knesset no tel sefer Torah. The Chazan took the sefer Torah, but not no l'rosh haKnesset. The rosh haKnesset is nasan l'skan. He gave it to skan. Baskan nasan on the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol omen makabel the korev omen. Korev achrei mos. Asar, the goal is a Torah, may Nicho, the Heiko, the Omer, Yotri Masha Karasi, Lifnechem Kasu, Ube Asar, Shibuchun Shabikin Korosal Pet. So the last stage in the Yom Kippurim, was part of the other or not, but the last stage in the tekets of the Kohen Gadol, he would read the Torah, he would learn Torah. So he started by learning Torah and he ended by learning Torah. And it's very interesting. It sounds like there was a tekes here. He didn't just take the Sefer Torah. The Chazan took it, he gave it to him. That's a very formal kind of procedure. So it's clear there's an element of Lima Torah to Avodas Yom Kippur. And the last Mishnah in Yuma, not the last one, we're going to do Haroe Kohen Gadol, Keshu Kore. When Eino Roe Par, when the two things happened at the same time, the Kohen Gadol would read the Torah, and the par of the Kohen Gadol and the Sa'ir that wasn't sent Lazazel, they were Nisrafim. They were burnt, not on the Mizbeach, but in the Beis HaSrefa. Haroe par v'sa'ir Nisrafim, eino roe Kohen Gadol shu kore. When the people who saw the par and sar being burnt didn't see the Kohen Gadol kore lo mitnei and rashai, not because they were lying, elishai did derech rechoka, because they were in two parts of the Beis Hamikdash complex. One, the Kohen Gadol was sitting in the azara, and outside they were burning it. And now a beautiful line, umalech shneim haita keechas, and because they happened at the same time. Now, I can't think of any other sentence that describes Rav Aharon more than Umalecha Shneihem Haita Ka'achas. What malachas are we talking about here? We're talking about Torah and Avoda. Learning Torah, the Torah was Korah, and the Avoda of Avodas Yom Kippur. Umalecha Shneihem Haita Echad. In the world of Rav Aharon, the Torah and the Avoda was one thing. It wasn't yet Lima Torah and Avodas Hashem. It was all molded into one beautiful personality of Malecha Shneim Hayafa Echad. But it's another element here, Umalacha. The word is Malacha, the work. Central to Rav Aharon's Hashkafa and philosophy was the idea of being an Evan Hashem. And we'll talk more about that. But the defining relationship between a man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu is between a Melech and an Evid in the worldview of Rav Aharon. Yes, there's a father and a and we say it on Rosh Hashanah im kemalachim im kibanim, but according to Rav Aharon, the defining relationship in the relationship to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's hard. It wasn't easy, honestly, for a lot of people. But the defining relationship is here. There's more. Sorry, do I have more? Yeah. There's the defining relationship was between a melech and an eved. Malacha shneim. Being a Jew and being a firm is doing work, hard work. It's Rav Salechik also, I think, thought in those terms. But the idea, and Rav Lipsy also used to talk all that time about the work ethic. He thought that was a very important part of Yadus. Okay, so we got that. That's basically not the introduction, even though Rav Aharon's, once Rav Schechter gave a shir in Gush, he came, and then Rav Aharon's introduction was longer than Rav Schechter's shir. I remember that Rav Lipsy gave a shir. I remember what it was about. I could see it right in front of me. He's sitting there, and it was about whether achrayas, do you have achrayas without a kinyan? And it, because Rav Luchsi used to give a shir in YU every time he used to come. So he was going, do I have an achrayas for Shechtin in the Akisa? And he gave, and the Rav Shechtin gave a shir on Eidus Beshtar about 20 minutes. And his introduction was 40 minutes. But okay, this is the half the shir. So the question is this: we saw four elements to the prisha. There's the element of tara to become purified, the element of kedusha of ema to have a fear before you work in the Beis Hamikdash, an element of practice and an element of limud Torah. So the question is: is there any relevance to us besides the element of limud Torah? Is there any relevance to us? As nowadays, sitting in Beit Shemesh in Tafshin Pei Aleph, is it just related to the Kohen Gadol and Mikdash, or is it related to us too? Okay, for that we have to look at the Rambam. So the first Rambam, Perek Aleph, Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam says, "Kol mitzvah shetorah ben aseh ben lo taseh im aver adam al chasmiyam bezadam b'shkaga kishiyaseh tshuva v'yashu mi chateo chayav l'spados lifnei el barach." So the famous Rambam, you have to tshuva and you vidui, the mitzvah is tshuva or vidui. I'm sure David has talked to you about that. But the question is, the Rambam says you have to tshuva and you're chayav l'spados. And then the Rambam says, so how does this work? In halacha, hey, sir mishtalech, lifnei shu kapara l'kol Yisrael, skagalo misvada l'av alashem kol Yisrael. The mitzvah is to do vidui. So the Kohen Gadol would do vidui on the Seir Mishtalech. The Seir Mishtalech would cause the kapara for all of Israel. Now the Rambam says, Bizman she'ein beis hamikdash kayim, ve'ein lanu mizbach kapara, ein sham ela tshuva. We don't have the Seir Mishtalech, so all we have is tshuva nowadays. Okay, so now something I learned from learning with Rabbi David many years, he taught me how to read a Rambam. And he's very medactic, and I guess he got it from his Rebbeim of this. So the question is, why does the Rambam say, Sira Mishtabeach, Lifnei Shu Kapara L'Kol Yisrael, Kohen Gadol, Misvadav Alashon Kol Yisrael. What's the Kohen Gadol doing in Hilchos Tshuva? We understand the Kohen Gadol is the star of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. If anyone wants to look in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, the word Kohen Gadol comes 14 times. Okay, that 14. But there, the Kohen Gadol is the center. Why is Rambam could have just written, Lefisha Kapar Yisrael, Misvado Lava Lashon Kol Yisrael? And what do we have to know? We know the Kohen Gadol did it. We know about Yom Kippurim. What does he have to tell us about the tshuva that the Kohen Gadol? So I think the Rambam is teaching us an important yisod. And this you have to get the analogy. And what happened? The Kohen Gadol did vidui on the Seir Mishtaleach, and that caused the kapara. Nowadays, we have no Seir Mishtaleach. We have to do vidui. So who does the vidui? We do the vidui. We are the ones who vidui. We are taking the place of the Kohen Gadol when we do the vidui. I think the Rambam clearly wants to make that. Shein beis mish kaim, eno mizrach kapara, eller shein sham el tshuva, we need vidui, and we do the vidui. The Kohen Gadol used to do the vidui, and now we do the Kohen Gadol. So we're taking the place of the Kohen Gadol, so whatever the Kohen Gadol had to do, prepare for the Yom HaKippurim, that's not a big step to say that applies to us. So the lesson is, what the Kohen Gadol went through, we also have to go through before Yom Kippur. We have to do Tara, maybe I'll talk about that, but we have to do elements of Tara. But it's not just going to the mikvah, it's working hard. It's purifying ourselves. We have to have the element of Ema. And I think that's something missing. The question that we have to of Ema when we walk into the Beis HaKissi Yom Kippur. And then, you know, Chaim Soloveitchik writes about this, that they're the element of fear. And people used to be having the element of fear of not only the Mikdash and the Beis HaKissi, but the action of Din. There's the element of awe before we walk into Shul. We need to practice. You can't just go into Yom Kippur without practice. Maybe that's the Slichos are for in the Vidui door. It's just you walk in. Without any practice, it's going to be hard. We have to practice doing tshuva and vidui. And four, we have to learn Torah. We have to learn about the Avodas Yom Kippur, and we have to learn about Hilchos Tshuva. So those four elements are relevant for all of us. Okay, so that all makes sense if, according to one side of my chakira, if Prisha is Alach and Avoda, then that makes sense. We're taking the place of the Kohen Gadol, and we should do the same thing the Kohen Gadol. But what according to Reish Lakish? That it was the whole thing was to preparation for the, as the Rav Soloveitchik, as preparation to meet the Shechina. What does that have to do with us on Yom Kippur? And right, David would know, where do we have to look for that? We have to look in Perek Zion of the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva. Now, I'm going to take a digression. I'm going to digress for 5 minutes here, because Rav Lichtenstein once told me that he thought this was the most beautiful Perek in Mishneh Torah, Perek Shvi of Mishneh Torah. And then I think there's a couple of reasons for it, but I think the first halacha, this is the first halacha in Perek Shvi of Hilchos Tshuva. However, Rishus called Adam the sinless law, Kamosha Barnu, talking about Bechiris Chafetz. Yishtado Adam Lasos Tshuva, Velena Ermi Kol Chatov, Kadesh Yamos Vubal Tshuva, Kadesh Yischel Lechai Olam Haba. So the Rav Lichtenstein has this great book, Renewal and Renewal, Return and Renewal. I recommend to everyone to read before, I read the whole thing before in the Seres Yimei Tshuva. But he says this: there is a remarkable word that appears in Hilchos Tshuva. What does it mean the person should strive? Yishtadel Adam Lasot Tshuva. The Rambam never says the person must strive to eat matzah on Pesach, or one should strive to eat in the sukkah on Sukkot. These are obligations, period. Indeed, the Rambam uses that exact terminology in the first chapter of Hilchos Tshuva, stating that one discovers he has sinned, he is obligated to follow a certain process of atonement. But here in chapter 7, the Rambam is speaking of the overall spiritual direction of a person's life. And this context is the striving that's crucial and central. It is a reflection of the fact that tshuva is a process and not necessarily a Rubicon that one must cross. The Rambam's injunction is just, what?
Rambam
uses Yishtadel, and Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. Right, we talked about that. Right, so the Rambam's injunction is strive through tshuva also throws down the gauntlets before us. Even when we were not engaged in a specific narrow focus on tshuva, the impetus to move along that path in pursuit of new paths, new directions, is central to tshuva. These people may be mediocre in certain rasa, their tshuva, in terms of effort and intent, need no ways be mediocre. A person should always strive. Even when that tshuva itself is mediocre in terms of justice results, that mediocre tshuva has great potential for accepting and for helping one achieve atonement. So tshuva in terms of effort and intent, it's not, according to Luxi, it can't be a mediocre tshuva and effort and intent. Okay, so hishtadlus was central to the world, to Rav Lichtenstein's Avodas Hashem. And then there's also another book here, Ashrei Adam Oz Labach, which also I recommend, I hope it gets translated, which is a set of hespedim written by his Talmidim about Rav Lichtenstein. And one is entitled Hishtadel. Aviad HaKohen wrote a hesped called Hishtadel. Okay, and he writes as follows. V'chol zes, achar kol dvarim, lo yisrichim lidvok b'midas Rav Aseinu, l'adirs yichidav so Rabbeinu b'mila achat. If we had to describe Rav Lichtenstein in one word, mayomrim, kasher nitgakeis b'rayam itanayak rai, Bishnak Vursa, Rav Lichtenstein was once asked, "Lahadir Ketzul Mesakim as Masechet Chayav." Umai wrote such a Tava Matzivato. They asked Rav Lichtenstein, "Can you describe in one word how do you describe your life and what do you want written on your tombstone?" Heishiv Ravarim b'mila achat kolkach ofyoni hishtadel. I tried. That's what he said about himself. That's what he wanted. I tried. And then he goes on. Achen kol yomav hishtadel Rav Aharon laharbas Torah laharbas Tefila laharbas Kmiyas Chasadim laharbas Kol Shemayim laharbas Shalom hishtadel. So I think that word that opens up the Rambam is central to Rav Lichtenstein, the world of hishtadlus, of hishtadel, of effort. And it's hard. He presented. It wasn't an easy picture that he presented, but So someone also wrote a book. How can he have so many talmidim if the goal was so high? Because he never compromised on himself. So he never took any shortcuts. So if you see a Rebbe who doesn't compromise on himself, then you have something to strive for. Okay, now we have to return to our question. According to Reish Lakish, how can we imitate the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur for Prisha? So the Rambam himself gives the answer to it. You'll have to do is read the Rambam, Perek Zayin Halacha, Vav gadol atshuva shemer kaves is adam l'shpina. Shemer shuva Yisrael Hashem Olchecha. Shuva is two things, as when Rav Lichtenstein writes all the time. Shuva is from something and to something. Shuva is from chet and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam uses the same word, Makaris Adam L'Shechina. The idea of Yom Kippur is to Makaris Adam L'Shechina. So if the whole thing of Rish Lakish was saying, and the Rashi says, is that we have to prepare ourselves for the Mokom HaShechina, so that's a big jump, that this Mokom HaShechina doesn't exist physically for us anymore. It's on a theological and a spiritual level that we stand before our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what the tshuva is about. So if, according to Rish Lakish, we prepare ourselves, so those four things also apply to Rish Lakish. Okay. That is the first thing I wanted to say, and that's now a little a divrei agadata. This is the beginning of the second parak. The beginning of the second parak, and I give you highlights of it, starts as the Mishnah goes as follows. In the beginning, anyone who wants to truma sedeshin, that's like to remove the ashes from the mizbeach and put them in a little corner. It was manche merubin ratzin ba'olim v'kvez. There needs to be a race. Called kodim is chaveru ba'arva amosachim. And the kohen needs to race in the morning. Who can do the truma sedeshin? Vima yeshneim shavim amun omerim hitzpiu. Umahem motziim achas v'shtayim v'ein motzin agadol agadol. If they were equal, then they used to do a hagrola. Okay, this is what I wanted to talk about. There was a time that both of them were equal. The Ratzin v'Olim v'Keves, and they ran up the ramp. The Dafach Echad Mihem Es Chavero, and one pushed the other one. The Nafa v'Nishba of Ragel, the Kev and Jero Basin, Shabbat v'Sakanet, Kiddushli Atarmis Mizbech, El Apayas Arapaisos V'Yisham Zepayas. So they stopped the race, and they would do a lottery to see who would do the Truma Sedeshin. Okay, there was a race. One pushed him and he broke his head. Okay, but it got worse than that. The famous Gemara on Chaf Gimel says, Tana Rabbanan, Maise B'Shnei Kohanim, Sheyishneim Shavin, Ratzav Olim B'Kevesh, Kidim Echad Nihem, Atof Arba Amar Shefadero, Natal Sakin, B'Takalo B'Libo, Ba'amad Rabbi Stadok, Al-Mailosa Ulam Ba'amar. Achenu Beis Yisrael, Shaman, Orei Omer, Kiyim Sal Chalaba, Demav Yisus, Echei Necha V'Shotecha, Anu Amila Vi Egla Rufa, Ir Ola Zaros. Who has to bring this Egla Rufa for this Kohen who died in this race? They were racing up and one killed the other. Go Kol Anu Bechi. But the story gets even more sad. Bo Aviv Shel Tino, the father of the Tino came, Umatza Kushum Parpe, and he wasn't dead yet. He was seizing. He was, you know, in death throes. Amr Hareu Kapara son. But he's your Kapara. He could be a Kapara for us. But dying beneath the parpet, below me tomorrow, stocking. Oh, great. You know what? My son is dying, but he's not dead yet. So the stocking that was used to kill him is not tummy. So what he does, he took it out and then it would save the stocking. So it's tragic that Taras of Kalim was more important to them than Shvichas Dam. So Rav Lichtenstein wrote about this incident. He wrote in the Sicha, and I'm quoting him now. Did the Kohen kill because he rejected sanctity and imposed the service in the temple, or rather precisely because of his passion and love for the service of God? God forbid we should say his teachers taught him that killing another human being is the special way of expressing devotion to God. But they were undoubtedly responsible for emphasizing one side, the importance of competitiveness, of devotion, of striving, of commitment, of zeal and ardor, without sufficiently emphasizing the corresponding importance of brotherhood, love, and respect, which must accompany the honest, pure, good, holy, and exalted desire to serve God. Rav Aaron Lipsky. Okay, that's how Rav Aaron is explaining the message of the thing that with their zeal they trampled on, you know, on, you could say, on Ben Adam le Makom, and that was cause of the tragedy. Yeah. Yeah, trampled on Ben Adam. Okay, just the last point I want to say, when I read these stories. I thought that this reminded me of something. This reminded me of the Shnei Siria Yom Kippurim. We have two Siirim on Yom Kippurim. We have the Siir Pnimi, which was the blood was sprinkled in the Kodesh Kedashim, and we have the Siir Lazazel, right? One Lashem and one went to Azazel. So if you look on a literary level, there's a lot of comparisons. I'm recording the Mishnah. Shnei Siirim Yom Kippurim. And going back to our Mishnah, or the Tana Rabbana, Maisa B'Shnei Kohanim, there were two Kohanim. Mitzvah Sanatiyu Shabbat, the Stay Seerim have to be equal. What happened in our story? They were racing up and they were equal. And then the Mishnah says the Kevis Lasalo. They made a ramp for the Seir Lazazel. Here we have the Kohanim running up the ramp. Umahaya Asa. What happened with the Seir Lazazel? They took one, the Dafak Lachora, and they pushed him down the mountain. The same thing that happened in our Mishnah, the Olim Bekevish, the Dafak Lachamihem. So he pushed him down, and the same thing happened to him. So it sounds like on one side of the story, that almost reminds him of the Seir Lazazel. They were running on a keves. They were exactly equal. One pushed the other. They broke the bones. Okay. If you don't buy that, I think the analogy goes even further. The Gemara in Shavuah says, Remeir Omer, kol asir in kaparasan, shava al tumas migdash uktosav. The word kaparasan. The Syrian or Kapara son. And again, that's in our story, Hareu Kapara son. But what was the Syrian Apnimia Kapara for? It was a Kapara for the Tumas Migdas in Toshav. And that's exactly in the story what they were worrying about of the Tuma of the Sakin. So I think if you put the stories together, there's a seer that runs down the mountain, and there's a Kohen that gets pushed off and he breaks his leg, and there's another Kohen who gets killed like the seer, the Pneem, and the Kapara for that is Tumas HaMikdash. And here exactly what happened, that we're worried about Tumas HaMikdash. Okay, so what's the message, if you buy the analogy or not? But what's the matter? I think that maybe can give us some insight. Everyone worries about what this Seir Lazazel. What? It's such a strange tekes that it's the old. It's not a korban. We get kapara on a seer that's not even sacrificed on the mizbeach. It's sent off, and that's called the kapara of Am Yisrael. Maybe that's the point of it. We averos that are done for zeal and for zeal, like Rav Lichtenstein writes, for avodas Hashem, but accompanied by a problem in Bein Adam LeChavero, for that the kapara can't be the regular kapara. The kapara can't be the Beis HaMikdash, because that's exactly the problem that you overemphasize for that. For that kind of kapara, which is emphasizing these stories, there you need the Seir Lazazel. And Rav Soloveitchik even goes further and says, You cannot, and this is an amazing word what he says. He says, a person on Yom Kippur cannot get kapara for mitzvahs ben adam l'makom if you haven't got kapara between mitzvahs ben adam l'chavero. A lot of people say it goes the opposite, that in order to get the adam l'chavero, you need to be able to replace it. Says, put forget. In order to get kapara ben adam l'makom, you also need kapara. You have to first get kapara l'ben adam l'chavero. Okay, so that's sort of what I want to say tonight. Just one last story that I want to relate, and I finished right on time, is, for the last 10 years of his life, Rav Lichtenstein used to give shiur Friday morning to a bunch of alumni. He used to come to his house, to the Beis Medrash, and for some reason he chose to do the Seder of a person's life. And he started with conception, with marital ethics questions, and he went to question of abortion, and he went to Brit Milah, and he went to Pidgin Aben, and he went to Bar Mitzvah, and he went to marriage, and then he went all the way through to halachas of Avelis and Kfura and Misa. So the life cycle, he called it, right? That was the word, Shurim in the life cycle that he used to give. Again, there were very few people there. It really was kind of a privilege to be there. But one Friday, again, the schedule was a little erratic. So one Friday I called him and I asked, is there a shiur this Friday? So he said, yeah, there's going to be a shiur this Friday. Come Friday. And then I get to the classroom we gave the shiur. He's sitting there alone. I said, where is everybody? He said, oh, there was no shiur. It was canceled. So what are you doing here? He said, well, I told you there's going to be a shiur. I knew you were coming. I have to give a shiur. So he sat and he gave me a shiur, a private shiur. And I remember what the shiur was on. He could have talked about anything. He talked about Levium. So, and he talked about the purpose of a Levium. There's a beautiful quote here that, in this book, let's see, I can find it, that, here we go. That Eli Lipschitz, he's a Rebbe in Mali Adumim, and he goes, he writes as follows. I hear that people are talking, this guy is a gadol b'Torah. Vani omer la'atzmi, oy vavai, me'olam lo ra'isi mahi gadlus b'Torah. You never even saw what gadlus b'Torah is. Harav, Rav Lichtenstein, mesuba b'chol rega, lamod b'gad shtender, la'tchil shir b'masechet brachos, l'saim b'masechet uksik. He could give shir on any topic of Shas. Right off the cuff without preparation, and I myself saw him do it. But not only in Nezikim and Moed and Nashim, but in Taurus and Zrayim and Kutchim. Sometimes he would be stoked. He had to rethink it. We talk safer him. He had somebody open a book sometimes. Ach besofer shel davar kol shas mebrachos al oksin ayom moneach b'mocha. All of shas from brachos al oksin. Was in his mind, it was all there. And it was not only there in Bikis, what's amazing was it was there for Eid. Every sugya and shas was worked out on a lumdus level, off the top of his cuff. Okay, so he chose to talk, give me a share on Levium. So I always wondered, why did he want to talk about Levium? Until I realized that it came obvious why. First of all, he loved the topic of Levium, I think for two reasons. One is because he's a Levi, is a hybrid kind of halacha. Is a Levi a Kohen or Yisrael? What is a Levi? Is he like a Kohen or is he like a Yisrael? Or is he a combination of both? So he loves sugyas like that. With talk about those things and what the nafkamim is. I remember he talked about Abbas Levi and Abbas Kohen, and you're talking all the lachos of the Levi. What is the chal shem of a Levi talked about? And then I realized the second thing is because the whole purpose of a Levi is to serve. What's the pasuk? I can't. But the whole purpose of a Levi was to be an Eved Hashem, was to serve without getting compensation. A Kohen got a lot of compensation. Levi got much less compensation. So the whole purpose of the whole mahut of a Levi was to lasharei and serve. And I think that really sums them up well, that was Rav Aaron viewed on Yadus and Avodas Hashem, was to really be Evan Hashem and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
I'm going to share with you snippets of different scenarios that I experienced as an unworthy Talmid of one of the Gdolei Ador. I was a late teenager when I entered the Shir of Avaron Lichtenstein in the late 60s. And his English was beyond me. His Hebrew was beyond me. To a large extent, I had difficulty simply understanding the conversation, the discourse. And that's how I began. He was a young man in his late 30s. And at that time, he was clearly sholeit in Kol HaTorah Kula. Kol Michmani HaTorah were open to him. And simultaneously, when he said the shir, he also made every effort that the shir should be in sync with his father-in-law, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, that he could attend that shir as well. So a whole group of us, who are literally youngsters, would attend the shir at the same time, his shir, and then accompany him to the shir of his father-in-law, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. So I'm just going to, as I said, by way of almost streaming, share with you snippets. I just like to begin with Dr. Jaskiewicz, referred to a beautiful Gemara in Maseches Yoma, a famous Gemara that Rav Aaron interpreted it dialectically, which really was the very essence of his persona. Everything was dialectic. Everything was nuanced. Everything was seen in every possible light. He would explore every possibility and somehow then put it together in the most beautiful way. So I'll start with, I was a avid basketball player. On a number of occasions, I'm playing basketball in the yeshiva, and all of a sudden, I see, not far from me, a Gaon Baruch Lichtenstein laying down with Svarim, which he carried generally about 10 of them at a time, all the Rambams, sometimes a Shas, sometimes a few Gemaras. And he comes down, is observing what's happening on the basketball court, and I can almost imitate him. Maybe a moment of self-indulgence would be in order. And all of a sudden, he puts his Svarim down and proceeds to join the basketball team. I was astounded. He had a wicked hook shot. He played very clean. When someone fouled him, which was rather often, there were one or two gentlemen there, if you can call them that, on the basketball court who left what to be desired. They were rather warlike in their temerity. Rav Aaron would say, "Oh, excuse me, I apologize profoundly." This went on the basketball court on an ongoing basis. So that's the dialectic that Dr. Jotkowitz spoke about. Competitive spirit, unquestionably, but accompanied by an ava, a brotherliness, a fraternity, a chesed, beidon machavero, that was amazing. He was always the one apologizing. When others fouled him, I was astounded how they could foul one of the Gdoli Ador. But they didn't seem to have difficulty. They were so embroiled in the competition and so ensconced in it, they didn't realize with whom they were playing. And very early in the shiur, one day, Rav Aaron tells us that there's no way to be in Ovid Hashem without studying the Fairy Queen. I didn't have a clue whom the Fairy Queen was. I thought it was some queen in England, and she must have had some fairy attached to her. I then went to the library to explore the Fairy Queen and discovered that not only was that one of his favorite, but anyone who knew Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he was not just a Gaon in Kol HaTorah Kula, but had, I can't even begin to testify to his voluminous knowledge of literature and the like. And Milton was one of his favorites. And so he made this statement about the Fairy Queen. I then went to read the Fairy Queen. It took me quite a while. And then I found it to be, to a large extent, I didn't see how it connected to my Avodas Hashem. So then I went over to Hagaon Abaron Soloveitchik Zatzal, who is the Mishpacha. He's the Shadchan for Abaron Lichtenstein. They were in Chaim Berlin together. And I asked Abaron Soloveitchik, could I ask the Rosh Yeshiva a question? He said, yes. I heard from my Rebbe, Abaron Lichtenstein, that without the Fairy Queen, you can't be Navid Hashem. So he looks at me and says, and what does the young Bacha think? That's what I was. I said, the young Bacha thinks that if you study Sefer Tehillim, that will give you, will lead you to Avodas Hashem. So he said, Rav Aaron, the young Bach is gerecht, referring to myself. Lamerad mit Abaron, let's go speak with him. Abaron Soloveitchik then takes me. The moment Lichtenstein sees Abaron Soloveitchik from a distance of, I don't know, probably hundreds of meters, he starts running at top speed to Abaron Soloveitchik. And what I saw, that alone was enough to absolutely put me in a state of unbelievable Ema. He's covered in Derech Eretz. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was absolutely lo yu'um ki yisupa. The first thing he does, he says, Rashiva, in Yiddish. They're speaking in Yiddish to each other. What can I do to be Mishamish you? What should I do? Rav Aaron, no. This is a young Bacher, a big Kumin, and wants to discuss something about the Fairy Queen and what. And he asked Rav Aaron, did you say this? So Rav Aaron quickly says to Rashiva, do I have permission to speak? He asked him for permission to speak. And after that, so Rav Aaron said, of course. Then he proceeds for about 15, 20 minutes to go into a lengthy dissertation on the Fairy Queen. And after 15, 20 minutes, so Rav Aaron Soloveitchik says to him, by the way, Derech Agav, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, did you read the Fairy Queen? So Rav Aaron says, Avada, of course. And I think the young Bacher is not completely incorrect. that one can gain avodas Hashem by a sefer tilim. There's not really a necessity, and then to read the Fairy Queen. As a matter of fact, the Baron Soloveitchik said, there were many Gdali Yisrael that didn't read the Fairy Queen and came to avodas Hashem kach shamati mipip kotcho, to Baron Soloveitchik. Baron Lichtenstein didn't say a word. Quiet. In the late 60s, I was in a shir, again, a young teenager. And one fine morning, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein tells us, we have to march on behalf of Biafra. Who's Biafra? I'm old Nidke Held from Biafra. They're a nation in Africa that received their freedom. And therefore, we have to march on their behalf. But there's a tonight called on the we're not going to miss the shir just because of Biafra. So everyone had a sign. They're going to come to the shir. And yet, still march on Biafra. We march on behalf of Biafra, and there I met Martin Luther King, the only time in my life, and another well-known personality related to a famous Chassidish Gadol. And they were walking together with Avraham Lichtenstein. I didn't have a clue what exactly we were doing. I was a very young man. There was bloodshed, not only there, but in many other countries that received their freedom. And Avraham Lichtenstein felt we have to, Ima Anochi Bitzar. Next day, I come back to the yeshiva, and two Rashi yeshiva accost me. I'm going to Rabbi Yochum Gerelik, and I'm going to Rabbi Nachum Bornstein. Rabbi Yochum Gerelik says to me, Abuz Mitzgeber Nechten, where were you yesterday? You weren't in the shiur room. The shiur was much earlier, and he was next door. So I says, well, we went to march on behalf of Biafra with the Rebbe. So Rav Grelick says, Mitvemin? With whom did you go? With the Rebbe. He took you to march on behalf of Biafra? Was there a fellow in the cup? Did he lose his mind? I'm using that lotion to be politically correct, as opposed to the other more classic Lashon. And Rabbi Bornstein joined, so they quickly go to Avraham Lichtenstein with me in tow to talk to him. And they proceed to berate him right in front of me. I was partially embarrassed in Yiddish. He doesn't say a word. Went on for a half hour. First, one of them usually takes the lead in this shutfis of two Talmidim with the Briskov. And the other one just joined the fray. I was astounded. He didn't say a word. After half hour, they go and leave. So I asked Rav Lichtenstein, Rebbe, how come you didn't react to these two? Do you agree with them? So he said, what? Trei tzantri dadava, these two golden rods, Talmidim from Briskov, I'm going to open up my mouth? Of course he didn't agree with them. When our Soloveitchik came to say a tshuva drasha or a yahrzeit shir, he was always accompanied usually by members of his family, his son-in-law, a rabbi professor Tversky, zecher tzaddik livracha, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, zecher tzaddik livracha. And the moment Rav Aaron again would espy the rabbi walking on the street, walking to Lamport Auditorium, he'd start running at top speed. Right away, he would take the rabbi's coat. He took off his boots, his rubbers, his scarf. He was mishamishim. Ke'ilu, he was mishamish his own parents. I wasn't zeicher to see that. You probably, Dr. Jotkowitz, saw it. When his father was blind towards the end of his life. I saw a number of times with his parents. But the shimush and the derechers that he showed for his shver was astounding. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein once invited one of the Gdolei Rashi Yeshiva who learned in Tells, Rav Arnest, zeicher tzaddik livracha. But in order to invite him, he had no telephone. He didn't even own a refrigerator. He had an ice box in his house, literally a cavernous hole in the ground with ice inside, and the food was placed there. I'm not talking about in the 1700s. So what happened? Rav Aaron said, we have to go and bring the Rosh Hashiva here. So the whole Shia goes and walks in Washington Heights to bring Rav Arnest. When the time comes, he appointed four or five of us to be the ones who will go into his apartment. And he led this group. We go into his apartment, Rav Arnest, And then to see the kavod that he showed for this Rav Arnest, again, awesome. We accompanied him several blocks all the way to the yeshiva, and then he introduced him in Yiddish, which most of us didn't understand. I did, I grew up on Yiddish. And then he said the shir, Rav Arnest in Yiddish. He learned in Tells in Europe, he was a goyim. He knew every Rashi Mishan since Royim, I think, Balpeh. It was clear, it was way beyond us. And then after the shir was over, Rav Arnest sat down, and Rav Lichtenstein proceeded to translate the shir of Rav Arnest, which took 3.5 hours. He just expanded on it, elaborated on it, of course, in English. And then on the way home, we were malavi him again. Unbelievable. There are cheretz for Tamil Chacham for Gedali Elu. To me, he was very intimidating and very frightening. I don't think Dr. Jakovich Shlita, who somehow Baruch Hashem was zocher to a personal relationship. We were frightened of being called on in the shir, not much different than the shir of Arav Soloveitchik, the same fear, the same Meir Rabbah Kemer Shamayim. When I was a Rosh Hashiva in Toronto, Rav Aaron came to test Talmidim. He would test them to Elu. Each Talmud before him was a Bekibeg of the door. They could barely read a Pasuk in Chumash, let alone a Blat Gemara. Each one was tested for 2.5 hours. He tested them on the whole Masechta. They didn't have a clue what was going on. Spent hours. There were two occasions where he was in Ovel, once for his mother, once for his father, Aleihem HaShalom. So he asked me if he could have a mincha. So I said, of course, for the Omid. So he told me that he's not into Hechdik Dusha. That's not his thing. He wants Chazaras HaShatz. So I explained to him, Chazaras HaShatz is fine, but we only have a limited amount of time because they have to play basketball afterwards. And that's more chosher than anything else. He didn't fully grasp that. He told me, Zelechud v'zelechud. And so he proceeded to daven mincha. Hishmanese Belachash took the entire mincha and probably most of their shachris. By the time he finished, there were only two people left, he and I. So I said to him, Rebbe, I don't think we can have Chazaras HaShatz. There's nobody here. So he said to me, where did they go? We just davened Shmanese Belachash. Now we need Chazaras HaShatz. He's saying Kaddish. I said, I explained to the Shiva that they go to the play basketball. He said, how could they both play basketball without hearing Chazaras HaShatz? I said, it's very possible. And so I had to go and retrieve them from the basketball court in order to have Chazaras HaShatz. It cost me a pretty penny called incentivization. I remember at one point he decided to say a shir in Hashkofa. The shir on a daily basis was 2 hours. And then he decided to say, beside that, Hashkofa. So one year he said Hashkofa, dogma in Judaism. So everyone was afraid to ask him, what's dogma? So he went on for 6 months. No soul knew what dogma was. He went through the history of dogma in philosophy, in literature, in halachic literature. And finally, one fellow said, Rabbi, what's dogma? What have you been talking about for 6 months? Rabbi Hussein didn't bat an eyelash and said, oh, would you like me to review the last 6 months? I came to many chasanas sitting together with Hagoyin Rav Amital Zatzal and Hagoyin Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, two Rosh Yeshiva. I never saw such a shutpis in my entire life. How is it possible? They literally loved each other. It was Abbas, Yonason, B'David. And now I got to tell you the following story. It happened 3 times. I saw it. I'm sitting at a chasana, and the chasan comes down, everyone stands up. Ifnei Melech. Both two Rashi Yeshiva stood up. Everyone stood up. The collar came down. Everyone stood up. Rav Amital stood up. Rav Lichtenstein remained seated. So Rav Amital says to Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Aaron, Was is das? In Yiddish. What's going on? Everyone's standing up. Rabbanan says, I'm thinking through my knowledge of the entire Shas in Poskim, I don't see any makar for it. What's the makar? So Rav Avital says to him, Was is das? Al tifash min atibor. So right away he stood up. So I asked Rav Avital afterwards, if there's no makar, why did he stand up? So he said, Rashiva, mir gesagt. Rashiva told me to stand up. And he gave some explanation, Al tifash min atibor, which I'm not sure is relevant. But the Rashiva told me, I had no choice. This happened a second time at a second wedding, and a third time at the third wedding. I said to myself, what is going on here? What, we repeat the scenario every single time at every wedding? So I asked Rav Lichtenstein, why? So he says to me, you asked me three times about going up to Har HaBayis in 21 years. First you asked me once, and I told you that my Shver is opposed to it, Av Soloveitchik. Then you asked me a second time, and I sat down with you about 12 years later, and we learned all the sugyos in Taras and Rambams. He spent about 3 hours with me, showing me the highways and byways of this issue. And then you asked me another 7 or 8 years later, and I told you I'm not holding by it because it says in Midoshi Tiro, I'm not holding by it, Midoshi Tiro. You're a Shur Amur, so I can be a Shur Amur too. He had a sense of humor. The Kolo in the Yeshiva University, the Gus Kolo, so Rabban was officially the Rosh Kolo, and said shiur in there. Once a week he used to come on Sunday. So for many years he said shiur in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew. And the Kolo had difficulty with his Hebrew. It was a very high-level Hebrew that Rabban spoke. As a matter of fact, every Yom HaTzmaut in YU, in Yeshiva University, he said the shiur in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew. To many of us, there wasn't much of a distinction between the Hebrew and the English. We didn't understand the Hebrew or the English. So Avraham Lichtenstein saw that a lot of the Chabrim and the Kollel were not attending the Shir. So he asked me what to do. So I asked him, why is he asking me? This is a number of years ago. Why did he ask Hagoyin of David Miller, the Rosh Kollel? So he said, Rav Miller said, ask Avishai David. And this is many, many years later after I was in the Shir. Of course, several decades later. So I didn't answer him. I didn't think it was my place to tell Rav Lichtenstein what to do. So every week he asked me, no, have you decided what I should do? So I just didn't respond. Finally, after 6 months, he became frustrated with me and said, okay, make a decision right now on the spot. I said, switch the shiur to English. Maybe the chaverim and the kollel will now come. So that week, I went around to every single chaver in the kollel, told them they have to come because the shiur is now being given in English. And they won't have any problem understanding it. They all came. After the shiur, Lichtenstein comes over to me and says, Ayashikach Godel, look at this. The whole chavir, all the chavirim of the kollel came. The shiur was in English. Obviously, it was the correct decision. Next week, not one of them showed up. So I went over to them. I was embarrassed, beyond embarrassed. Why didn't you come? We didn't understand a word of what he's talking about. His English is at a different level. I asked Rav Lichtenstein on a number of occasions, at what point are you mekayim the mitzvah tzedakah? So he shows me a series of Rambams and Gemaras and Ksubis and Baal Basra, a few other places. And then I said to him, could you summarize it for me? So he says to me, when you feel the pinch in the pocket, that was the lashon that I used. I remember that at Yom HaZeh. He brought me psukim. He showed me riots from Rishonim, Ksubis, and Baal Basra. It was about an hour and a half discussion. And I wanted him just to summarize it. And he said, when you feel the pinch in the pocket, that's when you're mekayim in the mitzvah of tzedakah. I remember going to a convention of Rabbonim. I'm a bit embarrassed to say this. And there was one Rav who was a chutzpan. And there were questions and answers after the shiur that he gave. And one Rav said to Rav Lichtenstein, how does he explain one of his children went off the derech? Bizar Loshen. Rav Aaron was taken aback. I was also taken aback. I didn't know who he was talking about. One of his children moved more to the yeshiva world side of things. I couldn't believe this. And then he had to explain himself because Rav Aaron didn't know what he was talking about. So with tears in his eyes, he started crying. And he answered, Kulam Ahuvim, Kulam Berurim, Kulam Giborim, Kulam Tzadikim, Kulam Isim Me'em Bavi Yira Vitzan Kana. The only suffix I had ever about Abraham Lichtenstein was what was greater, his tzidkus, his righteousness, or his goyness. He was a goyin, as Dr. Jatko had said, in Kol Mechmani Ater. There was nothing he was not aware of. I never heard him say a word of Lashon Hara in all the years I had a connection. He didn't know how. As a matter of fact, Rav Aaron told the following story. When he was a youngster, he said, I think in fourth grade, Eastern Parkway, where he grew up, I don't remember the name of the yeshiva, there were a bunch of rowdy students, as is the wont of young students. And at one point, the Rebbe left the class, and one student, apparently out of control, broke a large plate glass window, which was obviously a major nezek. The Rebbe came back, and the Rebbe said, who did this? About 30 kids in the class, Rav Aaron said, not a word. No one's going to snitch on the student who did it. So Rav Aaron said to himself, he was in fourth grade, am I mechuyev al pidin to reveal this piece of information? So he said, I started examining it based on this thesis, based on that thesis. I thought according to one side, I'm not. Then I felt according to the Chavetz Chaim, Shmir Saloshin, according to a certain Ha'ara, I'm mechuyev to do so. So he then decided after that thinking to reveal it. He did it. And then he said, Bezal Loshin, I was pummeled unceremoniously after class. For years, I didn't understand. Why did they treat me in such a fashion? Apparently, they held like the other tesis. The element of humility, the anova. He was really easily approachable. Once I got past a few hurdles, I used to approach him on an ongoing basis. And his humility was unbelievable. A number of times he told me, every time he would cite a Gemara, we didn't have necessarily Gemaras with us to be in a room without Gemaras, and he would tell me, okay, you'll take a look at Krisus Dachof, and Erchin Yutes. You look in the Masech HaSeifer in Perek Chof, this halacha. So I was astounded by this kind of bekiyus. So then he told me, with his characteristic humility, there's a special al-chet for people who have to demonstrate their knowledge of the page number every time a passage of Gemara is quoted. I said, which al-chet is that? And he told me, al-chet shedibarnu dofi, that we've spoken the daf. I remember 1968, I was sitting in the shir, and Rav Meir Lichtenstein, Sheibadu L'chaim Arukim, was 5 years old, approximately. He used to come every Sunday with his bat and baseball cap to play ball with his father, except his father was in the middle of the shir. And the shir on Sunday usually was much longer than the average shir. And so there were a few gentlemen who wanted the shir to end, so we would quickly usher him into the room. And he then would proceed to go and utilize his bat right near his father. And Rav Aaron would respond, a few moments, I'm in the middle of the shir. I'm occupied at this point. You tell this to Rav Meir. I guess Rav Meir, if he remembers. Rav Meir then responded to him in three languages, Hebrew, French, and Yiddish. And English, because Rav Aaron spoke Hebrew to his children. Dr. Tovah Lichtenstein spoke English. Rav Aaron spoke French fluently, even though he left France when he was a year old. And he also, his Yiddish was quite good. I pursued Avraham Lichtenstein for about 5 years. I wanted him to write a letter which would essentially justify students who came to Eretz Yisrael to learn for a year and a half and then change their plans, as opposed to going to secular universities, would then either go to Yeshiva University or would go to a different kind of venue. And these are individual students who signed contracts when they are seniors in high school and felt that they could not void these contracts. And I had a machlokes with a famous menahel in one of the famous high schools in the United States. It was Menahel Frisch for many, many years. And he and I had an ongoing machlokes regarding this because he felt they all should go to Ivy League colleges, should receive academic education, a high standard, et cetera, et cetera. But I felt that it was far better for them to be in a yeshiva setting together with their ability to pursue professional academic titles and the like. And so it took me 5 years to convince him. 5 years. After 5 years, he was masked. And he wrote a letter, which recently I was able to reproduce. Forgot to bring it with me. I would read it to you. You would see how Rav Aaron would write a letter. His letters were Moli v'godush, lomdis, intellectual analysis, sensitivity to all the parties that were involved. Just absolutely incredible. His hasmoda was astounding. But when he spoke to you, he was completely directed his attention to you, completely. Total gisha v'adas. Kilio, the only person in the world that he had to deal with. I'll just mention the dialectical element that I found to be embedded in his entire approach to learning, to life. And I will mention something that I heard from him probably close to 50 years ago on Pasha Shmini that we just read. He noted that Rashi the Medezra have a machlokes vahi bayom Hashmini. What day are we referring to? Rashi learns it's Echad ben Nisan. They have 7 days that precede that. The Mishkan was erected and dismantled on a daily basis. And finally, the entire matter was concretized on Echad ben Nisan. Going to Ibn Ezra, we're talking about the 8th day of Nisan. Whatever the position is, Rashi the Ibn Ezra, we're talking about a day that was obviously a day of Chagiga, a day of Yom Tov. The Gemara has actually in Gittin, Daf Samach, the Gemara said that Shmona Parshios Nemru Balso Yom, the Gemara in Shabbos Pei Zayin, Yom Zed Nata Asar HaToros. Many comments Chazal had about that day. So it was a day of tremendous chiddush of what Rav Aaron would call Rishoniyut. It was a sense of Yitchatshut that suddenly took place. But Mitzad Sheni, what happened? The day-to-day regimen began. It's one of Rav Aaron's favorite themes. He spoke about many, many times. Namely, a person on a daily basis works, has a certain regimen. It could be dry, it could be jejun, it could be insipid, it could be tasteless, it could be not exciting. According to Rashi, this clearly comes to the fore because during the course of 7 days, they erected the Mishkan, dismantled the Mishkan. The Mishkan was a temporary, provisional kind of structure. And obviously the 8th day, now they enter that regimen. But even according to Ibn Ezra, that he learns we're talking about the 8th day of Nisan. Also, clearly there's an element of Chagigiyut as well, undoubtedly. And Rav Lichtenstein referred to a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Daled, that Moshe wore Big Day Lavan. The Gemara has twice, two or three times in Shas, the Gemara mentions this, that he wore Big Day Lavan during that 7 day period, Choluk Lavan, not Big Day Kahuna. Rashi points out that Big Day Kahuna are destined for Kohanim, Amiyu of the Kohanim, and Moshe was a Zar, V'alpi Adibu Shimesh. Tesis argues and says the reason that Moshe could not wear the Big Day Kahuna, they were not yet Niskadesh, they weren't yet sanctified. But even Tesis is masking that Moshe Rabbeinu serving as a Kohen was a special dispensation. And the regular regimen began Biyom HaShmini. So there, Rav Lichtenstein went into an entire discussion about two roles. The role of Moshe Rabbeinu during the 7 days, Choluk Lavan, as a Novi, Alpi Adibu Shimesh, and the role of Aaron HaKohen as a Kohen during the regimen on a daily kind of basis. Essentially, he contrasted Mitzvah HaNoshim Ulubada, what we do on an ongoing basis, Shnayim Layom Ola Samid, with the element of Chiddush, and indicated that that is exactly how a person should lead his life. Primarily, there should be a regimen on a daily, ongoing kind of basis, a certain self-discipline that one imposes. There's a need for spontaneity, a need for chidush, a need for excitement. And that theme runs through many, many of Avraham Lichtenstein's chidushim and many of his shiurim and hashkafa. I heard him speak about, he spoke to a group of people who were about to go to Poland. And I was present a fair number of years ago. And I'll just perhaps end with this because I'm probably beyond my veil. I have a lot more to go, but I can't. He pointed out to the audience of young people that you're about to depart to one of the most blessed lands and one of the most cursed lands, Svei Dinim, even in Poland. A land that was so vibrant in Jewish history, Mitzad Echad, but a land that, Rachmana Litzlan, became the largest Jewish graveyard in the world, Mitzad Sheni. So it's going to be a trip that will enrich you, on the one hand, but also a trip that will expose you to endless pain. Hopefully it will promote your growth as a Jew, as a human being. Rav Aaron referred to a Mishnah in Maseches Erechim. Because when speaking of Hegdish, at the end of Ayikra and Bechukosai, the Torah outlines a procedure to redeem Hegdish. I'm talking about not when there's a Gdus Saguf, but when the Hegdish owns property. How do you put a price tag on this property? So the answer is, Bimkomo Veshato. We're all born in a certain kind of zeitgeist, in a certain epoch, in a certain geographic locus. Al Korcha Tanolad, Al Tochai. Now you're leaving Mekomo Veshato. People do it all the time. The goal is to transcend the coma of a chateau. But on the other hand, we are still anchored. So Rav Lichtenstein indicated that that's what's happening when these students are about to go to Poland. A sense of dialectic. That sense of dialectic also was present the year before Rav Lichtenstein came to Eretz Yisrael. I was zeicha to hear shiurim from him on Inyan Yisrael. It was clear he was head of Eretz Yisrael. He said many, many shiurim that I was zeicha to hear, literally tens and tens of shiurim relating to not only the overview, all of Mishnah Yisroim in the course of 1 year, but we were introduced to a lot of the most fundamental sugis in Shas, Kedusha Rishayna, Kedusha Shniya. He discussed at great length the double Kedusha of Yerushalayim as being a Chelik of Migdash, which is Rav Soloveitchik's Chiddush, but he then took that Chiddush and said 2 weeks of Shiurim on this Chiddush, proving for all of Shas this dual element that's present in Yerushalayim. Rav Lichtenstein was an astounding personality. Sonua, Nechba Lakelim, Shein Kamo. A sensitivity to humanity, to human beings, that was incredible. And a tzaddik, a goyin and a tzaddik at the same time. He was very complex. And complexity is something which is not very popular b'zmane no. People don't like complexity. This door wants black and white. Everything has to be crystal clear. That's not what Rav Lichtenstein was all about. I remember speaking a number of times to Agoyin Rav Meir Lichtenstein Shlita, Yedidenu. So he told me, David, Abaya Shalcha, Shata Adayin Lo Zasta, Tizuzva Achad Meyashur Shalsada. You're still sitting in the shiur of our salvation. You're still sitting in the shiur of my father. You haven't moved one iota. Did you know the world has changed? So the mayor told me. So I told the mayor, "Mipchinati, mi omer lecha shehashinuyim ha'eluhem shinuyim chiyuviyim?" Who says it's good? I want to bring the world of yesteryear back to our world today. I think there's a lot of value to that. That's how I see, generally, my tafkin. Rav Lichtenstein felt that the whole shiur should go into chinuch. We were in a shiur of about 120 talmidim. He felt that everyone should go into chinuch or rabbanus. So someone told him that there are other professions. But he said, I'm not familiar with that. There's a need for mechanchim, a need for rabbanim, and that's where they should go. I spoke to him about my aliyah to Eretz Yisrael 25 years ago. And he encouraged me to make aliyah. But he again warned me. He told me what his shver, what Rav Soloveitchik said. If one is a rav, a mechanich, and chutzaretz, and that's where his role is, and he's accomplishing tremendous things, he should continue to do so. But if he feels he could also do the same in Eretz Yisrael, he should obviously make aliyah, because he saw Eretz Yisrael as being the future of Jewry. Dynamics of Jewish life, I heard him say a number of times, are all here in Eretz Yisrael. When he left Chutz Aretz, it was a shock and a loss beyond belief. Everyone thought that the Chasna the Ben Nisiyah was going to be replaced his Shver, his father-in-law, but it wasn't meant to be. But no question, he enriched Eretz Yisrael beyond belief, built the yeshiva, L'Shemo Teferis, produced thousands of Talmidim, and unquestionably his legacy is one that will remain the Dori Doros, or the Netzach Nesach.